Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. A brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome again to Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum as we wrap up this last weekend of the first month of 2022 and look forward to hopefully getting some warm weather down the road because it's cold. Even here in the south, in Georgia, we're getting temperatures down to 24 degrees tonight, I understand. It was relatively nice today, even though the temperatures were in the mid and low 50s. When I was out shopping with my wife this afternoon, well, it was beautiful. It was just cold, but not as cold as it is in other places, so we have that to be thankful for. But hopefully things will start to warm up. February is supposed to be Groundhog Month, and that's when we're supposed to be able to tell whether we have six more weeks of winter or spring is on the way. So anyway, we're glad to have everyone with us tonight, and we certainly want to let those of you who are listening via the Internet know that we would be very happy if you join us around the family room as participants in our discussion. It's caller's choice, so you can actually call in and talk about whatever's on your mind. Your number to call is 657-383-0671. But before we go any further, I do want to check my co-host, Mr. Bianchi, and ask for a radio check. Mr. Bianchi, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, you sound pretty good.
Okay, well, great. Okay, well, we want to go ahead and get started with a little something to get us pepped up a little bit so we can have a lively conversation here in our family room. So from Cabaret Cabinets, we got a little piece here we're going to share with you just to get you jumping a little bit. Just not too much, just a little something. Something to put a little, I guess you might say, spruce into the conversation this evening. It's from Cabaret Cabinets, a little something, a little piece that I worked on a little earlier today. So we're going to go ahead, and it's called Choice, but I do have something on my mind I'd like to go ahead and kick the show off with, and we don't have to respond to it. If you don't want to, we can always ship whatever you might want to talk about, but this is something's been on my mind all week, and I will share it with you. Just here recently, the president made an announcement. It's received a lot of negative feedback, a lot of backlash, and that was that he intends to appoint a black woman, African-American woman, to the Supreme Court when the vacancy that's going to be created by the retirement of Justice Breyer occurs at the end of this Supreme Court term. And I'll tell you something that Ben Carson said. I'm not a big fan of Ben, but at one time I really admired him when he was world-renowned for his work in pediatric neurosurgery. But once he got into politics, I kind of, you know, not that I disagreed all with all his political agenda, his political ideas, but it just seemed like he stepped out of his ballpark into something that I just didn't see where he really fitting in, but that was just a personal opinion. He could have inspired, and maybe still does, you know, generations of young potential medical doctors and surgeons in particular. But he said that it makes absolutely no sense for President Biden to be announcing that in advance, even though this Supreme Court justice actually retiring, makes absolutely no sense for President Biden to be announcing that he's going to nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court. And he said that Biden can open the door to a detrimental precedent by focusing on a woman of color. He said, and this is from the Huffington Post, a very credible news source. He said, if he can do that, then who else can do it in the future using the criteria that they want and completely ignoring all the progress that's been made? I'm not sure what particular progress he's referring to, but he does say something that I have a question about. I'm not sure I agree with it, but he says we need a Supreme Court where we have the best candidates who understand the Constitution and are not trying to legislate from the bench. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I have studied law. I was a pre-law student at the University of California, Berkeley, in my early college days. And I have had an interest in the theory of law, even though I've never wanted to practice law. And a great deal of legislation occurs from the bench. In fact, precedent that has been established in courts by legal judgments is the basis of quite a large percentage of the law. You have the codified statutory law that's based on at the state level, state legislatures passing laws that are signed into law by the state governors. And at the federal level, of course, we know that the Congress passes laws, and then these laws are signed into law by the president. If he vetoes the law, they have an override provision in the Constitution where they can still make these bills turn into law. But a whole lot of law is made by the judgments of judges. So that's really not a correct statement. But the main point is the fact is not so much what Dr. Carson has said, but my issue is not with Ben Carson's position. My issue is with President Biden announcing in advance that he plans to nominate a woman, and the qualification her nomination, the number one qualification that he put out there was that she had to be a African-American woman, an African-American and a woman. And I don't think that was very smart, because all he did was start a pushback that's going to be getting bigger and bigger all the way up until the time for this nomination to actually occur after Justice Breyer has retired. And it's very likely that in the midterm election, the Senate is going to be, after the election, controlled by Republican majority. And they're the ones that have to basically, I'll use this term, sign on to, you know, there's another legal term, you know, but they're the ones that have to approve the nomination. And that's very unlikely that they will do that. And they might have done it if he had nominated a African-American woman that nobody could disagree with her merits as a judge, as a person in the judicial system, because usually, not always, but usually appeals court judges are the ones that get selected, but that's not always the case. And if this person had a sparkling record as a judge, had helped to write decisions that were textbook decisions that are taught in the best law schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that would be a whole different story, because then they would be looking at that person's qualification. Now, when Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the first Jewish Supreme Court appointee, went to the bench. She had a great track record. I saw a documentary, and her track record was spectacular. And I don't remember who the majority was in the Congress at that time. But, you know, they advised and consented, which is a proper term, to her nomination, and she became the judge, the justice. But I don't think anybody announced before they sent her name to the Congress, to the Senate, rather, we're putting up here because she's a Jewish woman, even though she was. But I think they said we're putting up here because she is the best qualified person for the job and happens to be a Jewish woman. Now, it may have been, you know, always the intention of putting a Jewish woman up there, but to announce it, I think, was not too smart. Anyway, let me pass it on to my co-host, Ms. Bianchi. Any thoughts on this, or would you like to introduce a new, a different topic?
Well, I don't find, I think Ben Carson made a very accurate statement. Biden was a fool to make that type of statement that he has when the all discrimination laws say that you're not supposed to make those decisions based on gender or ethnicity. So basically when he said that he's going to appoint a black female, black in particular, it's racist. If you did that, say you're going to appoint a Chinese female or Chinese male, or I'm going to appoint an Alaskan Hawaiian, or I'm going to appoint a Italian, white Italian, that's totally, totally wrong. Ben Carson said the qualification should be based on the best. They didn't do that on Clarence Thomas. They said we're going to appoint a black man. So that's really ignorant. And court judges don't make laws. Judges are supposed to, when Congress passes an act is presented as a bill, it comes out as passed as an act, then becomes statute. And that statute applied to one of the titles, of the 52 titles. Number 26, for instance, is the Internal Revenue Code. And the head of the Internal Revenue Service would take that statute, read it, then they would create rules and regulations based around that statute. Now, if somebody have a problem with that, what they do is raise a concern in the court and say that this rule is unconstitutional, or this rule doesn't go along with what Congress meant for it to go. And that's what they rule on. And we have seen it abused, like in the case of the Affordable Health Act, when the issue was brought up in front of Justice Roberts concerning the Commerce Clause and the application of it and implementing the Affordable Health Act. Initially, that was the question on the table, which Roberts ruled against it. But after ruling, he comes up with this infamous but, which was not even a question. It said it could be a tax. Well, that was totally wrong, Justice Roberts. The question was, and it wasn't general, it was pretty much precise, dealing with the Commerce Clause. And I asked the same question of Judge Joe Brown yesterday. And he agreed, he said, judges do not legislate. It's not their job. The Constitution don't give them the power to legislate. And they surely can't legislate against something that makes that permits them to even exist. So not only Carson, but many others said that too. And as far as the pick, one woman Miss Candace Akinwufu Mufu. She's a Nigerian. She's a Nigerian American. She's not a black American. She's a Nigerian. And she's got a pretty good, impressive record. And yes, she's married to a white Jew. But that's her choice. So let's see what happens. And as far as Ruth Gender Ginsburg, she's the one who made the statement regarding the Roe versus Wade decision. And she made the statement, and I'm not saying it verbatim, but I could get it. Well, she said, it came at a time when we didn't want too many of a certain people. And that certain people, I wonder who she was talking about. Anyway, I'll turn it over to the next person.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Jack. The next person, as we go around in the virtual family room, is St. John Cannon Bay. Welcome to the show, St. John Cannon Bay. So glad to have you again tonight. And what are your thoughts?
Right now, I'd like to say good evening. If the court is unbalanced, you have a certain segment of people not represented, at some point in time, they need to be represented. You know, so I think that's the issue, and it has to do with fairness. So we have an issue when law situation is unfairly, I think, because of missing influence of certain demographic of people. So that's a problem that needs to be fixed, so it should be fixed. That's my thoughts on that. I have a question. Was anyone know whether Hitler was a Catholic or not?
I don't know if he was a Catholic or not. I can't tell you, so I can find out in about 2 minutes. I can ask Sheikh Google, as my friend who's also with us tonight, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, calls Google, Sheikh Google. You know, Sheikh is a honorific term that has several meanings. You know, it can mean a scholarly person. It can mean an honored or older person. But Sheikh Google was right here, and I'll ask Sheikh Google the question, was Hitler a Catholic? Okay. Coming right up. We're going to give you an answer. It says Hitler was born, it's your answer. This is from Wikipedia. You know, I don't allow my students to use Wikipedia only because people can post stuff up there that doesn't have to be peer-reviewed and checked for credibility, but I think this is where we can find a good answer. Hitler was born to a practicing Catholic mother and was baptized in the Roman Catholic Church. His father was a free thinker and skeptical of the Catholic Church. And in 1904, he was confirmed. Not only was he baptized, but he also was confirmed at the Roman Catholic Cathedral in Linz, Austria, where the family lived. But it says the witnesses that were there at the confirmation said that his sponsor had to drag the words out of him, almost as though the whole confirmation was repugnant to him. And according to several witnesses who lived with Hitler in a men's home in Austria, it says, I'm trying to pull it up, but apparently it says he never again attended mass or received the sacraments after leaving home at 18 years old. But he did, in his book Mein Kampf and in public speeches, he expressed himself as a Christian. So technically, one could say that he was a Catholic because he was baptized and confirmed, but he apparently did not practice Catholicism and was skeptical of it. So that's the answer that is in Sheikh Google. Does that answer the question, Sheikh John Cannon Bay?
Yes. The reason I asked the question, it seems like he find some of his men find sympathy in South America, Argentina, and they kind of hid, they helped hide them and sort of as if they approved what Hitler and his administration had done.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the Pope at the time of the quote-unquote Holocaust, Pope Pius XII, his name before he became a pope was Bishop and later Cardinal Eugenio Carcelli. And he was the pope at the time that I was baptized and confirmed in the Catholic Church. And he has been accused by different groups and also historians of having, I don't know what the right word is, but I'll just say facilitated the removal of Italian Jews into concentration camps. Now, that doesn't relate directly to whether Hitler was a practicing Catholic or not, but it does shed some light, in my opinion, on Hitler having an ally that was a Catholic, the head of the Catholic Church, as a matter of fact. But according to what I just read, yeah, he was a Catholic, but, you know, did not practice Catholicism and did still call himself a Christian. Did you want to add any more, Sheikh John Kennedy?
No, I was just curious how religion played in the role of what took place during that Holocaust. Did you say that the Italian Jews were treated differently?
Well, no, all the Jews throughout Europe were treated pretty much the same under any type of system that Hitler was over. Now, you know, there were pockets, like in Sweden, for an example, and I think in other places, maybe in Holland, I'm not sure about Holland, but in Norway, you know, there were places where he did not have the control that he had in certain places, like Italy, for example, and certainly Germany and Hungary, Czechoslovakia, and places like that. And German Jews and Italian Jews and Czechoslovakian Jews were all treated pretty much the same. In other words, the plan was to exterminate them. And so all of these concentration camps and even these gas chambers were built with the express purpose in mind is to rid Europe as much as possible of the Jewish people. But the Italian Jews were subject to the same thing once the Pope basically surrendered to Hitler's will and said, okay, I'll turn my head, and you let your Gestapo people come in here and round these folks up. And that's pretty much what is reported to have happened.
So the Jews, did they have a common heritage in Spain with the Moors?
Well, you know, Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali has done a considerable amount of very credible research concerning that, and I'm going to pass it on to him when his turn comes. There's one person that's before him on the around the circle, but he may want to address that. But I can tell you, as a historian, the fact is that one thing that he did have in common is, and Mr. Jesus can expand on if you would like to, is that they were actually expelled in 1492. And those who did not leave, who professed to have converted to Christianity, were subject to the Inquisition. And if they were found out to not have really converted, but to have pretended to have converted just so they could stay in Spain, they suffered torture and execution. I mean, the kind of torture they were subjected to was very, very, very barbaric. And I will say this, and then I'll turn over to our next guest. But when my wife and I lived in Italy, during the 7 years that we lived in Italy, we visited, we did a tour in a place called San Germano in northern Italy. And what we saw there was representative of what was going on in Spain as well, under the Dominican friars and the Jesuit friars, the Jesuit priests and the Dominican friars. They used some of the most horrific means to exact confessions from these people. And I don't even want to begin to describe some of the instruments of torture that they use, but I will mention just one. Many of us, even though it's not as much in use today as it was in my childhood and even my teenage days, are familiar with execution by the electric chair. Been pretty much replaced in most places with lethal injection. But they, those inquisitors, had not an electric chair, but a chair that had spikes on the seat that were heated up to red hot. These little iron spikes were heated up until they were red hot. They weren't heated up enough to melt, but just to be red hot. And they would sit the victim on top of these spikes. I mean, that's just so unbelievably horrific and barbaric. It's hard for me to even accept it, but I saw the chair, so I know it's a reality. So the Jews were persecuted, expelled, and those that did not leave, they were in inquisitors' targets. Whereas the Muslims pretty much left. They didn't, you know, take out the things that they had given to Spain, like the University of Cordoba, other great things in terms of scholarship and other trades that they developed. But, you know, these people were from what we now call Morocco, but northern part of Africa at that time wasn't just what we see as in the map today as Morocco. So these people, you know more about them more probably than I do, Shaytan, but these people, when they went to Spain, they were there for like 700 years, and they settled in and helped build that civilization. And contrary to popular opinion, they had coexistence and even collaboration and cooperation with the Jews for a great part of that time. So the Christian king and queen, Ferdinand and Isabella, then the term is a reconquista, but it means a reconquering. During that period, you know, one of their objectives was to reconquer the Spanish lands from the Muslims. And they were successful in 1492, driving the last Muslim stronghold occupants out. But they also went after the Jews because they were upholding the Roman Catholic banner. So the Jews and the Muslims had a lot in common in many ways. And one of the main things, as I said, not to have gone into so much detail, is that they were required to leave for under penalty of death. By Ferdinand and Isabella in 1492. And as I said, Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali has done a lot more research on this subject than I have, and he can give you more information. But I hope I haven't asked you to be too patient by going into all that detail. But I thank you for the question.
Oh, I appreciate the answer in detail. I appreciate that.
No, well, thank you so much. Did you have anything else you wanted to add before we go to our next guest? All right. Well, it looks like Brother Williams back with us. And if that's the case, welcome home. Brother Williams.
Well, greetings.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Greetings. Happy New Year. I'm just getting settled down. I was for most of December, well, not most of December, the latter half in December, I was in Ethiopia. And then
yes.
when I got back here to New Orleans, I got a call from Black Alliance for Peace, saying, why don't you join us as part of a delegation to Daniel Ortega's inauguration in Nicaragua. So I went to Nicaragua around January 9th. 10, 11, I was part of a delegation, Black Alliance for Peace, to be at the inauguration of Daniel Ortega's fourth term. And then in February, on the 20th to the 28th, I'll be in Egypt for the One Africa Return to the Source Conference with Leonard Jeffries and a whole bunch of people, Tony Browder and Rosalind Jeffries and so on and so forth. So I'm kind of tired right now, but I already paid my $4,200 for the Egypt trip.
Yes, sir.
I want to pick up where you talked about Biden's. Yes, I think that was. I think what's going on with that announcement is that it's very obvious that the Democrats will lose the Senate and the House. Black voters have been disappointed because nothing that Biden has promised has occurred. There's no police reform bill. There's no voter, no sweeping voter rights legislation. We can go on and on there. And so they're concerned that these black voters won't come out. And so by announcing that, just that, Biden will say he will appoint a black woman to say, I'm supposed to wake blacks up, you see, and then have us run to the polls and all that kind of stuff. But then what's the outcome is that the opposition rallies and gets stronger, like you said. So it's really time for African Americans to really go back. If you go to a YouTube channel called, I think it's called Black Marxists or Afro Marxists. It's a YouTube channel with different video clips. And they show in the early 70s when blacks were actually talking about a black political party. And you had all, you know, Reverend Cleese and all these people talking. Real, real nice. See, we was at that point, as you remember, Dr. Washington, where blacks were just about talking about an alternative in electoral politics. But then we started getting elected to a lot of these major cities as mayors and city council persons, and we kind of abandoned that. But it looks like we've run our course with the Democratic Party. It will not produce another FDR-type legislation and so on and so forth, and that the Democratic Party, like the Republican Party, are corporately controlled, and black people are being used. And so that's what I believe that announcement was for. It was like for us to get excited and to make us want to go to the polls to make sure Biden stays in office and all this kind of stuff. But then again, the outcome is that you've announced your plans to the enemy, and now the enemy can get their strategy together and coalesce and get stronger, because it seems to me if that's what you wanted to do, you just still have black women as part of the pool. You just pick the person, but to make it an announcement like it's something that's what you got to do, you know, that it does come across somewhat suspicious and like a failed operation, like all other Biden's operations have been failed. And so, but it's because they're concerned, they know the Democrats know they will lose the midterms and possibly the, now what I did read about a month ago, Mr. Washington, was that there's problems with Kamala Harris, who a lot of the white folks don't like Kamala Harris, and so there's talk about getting her away from Biden before the re-election. So I had read a month ago that the possibility was that she might be recommended for a Supreme Court position just to get her away from being a vice president. And so it's all kind of shenanigans going on, and the African-Americans are being really exploited, because instead of being given policy and systemic reform, if you want to use that term, we're being given symbolism. And I think that that's a failing approach to address the issues we've been talking about. And it just shows you how we're taking advantage of.
Well, Brother One, again, welcome back. Welcome home. And you got more traveling to do. And I'm sure that we are going to miss you. But safe travels. And I know wherever you are, you'll be very effective representing. So just great to have you back. Did you want to add any more before we go over to Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali?
I do want to say it's going to be interesting. You know, when I think the guy is going to announce, the guy is going to officially retire in the summertime. We don't even know if the Senate, well, it's going to be interesting to see if the hearing for this person that's selected is even done before the but I see what happened, Matt, because whoever's elected for November midterm, they're not going to be inaugurated until January of 2023. So it's going to be interesting. And then the two with the cinema and the guy from West Virginia, it's going to be interesting to see how they come along on this, you know. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Thanks again, Brother One. So it's my honor to reintroduce to everyone, because I think everyone has already been on the program with Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali, and we certainly look forward to his contribution tonight. We're into the last 20 minutes of the show, so what we're going to do is after Mr. Jesus finishes his commentary, his initial commentary, we're going to go back in the direction headed back to Ms. Bianca for the closing. So after Mr. Jesus, what I'm going to do, since Brother Warren just finished speaking, what I'm going to do is kind of switch up a little bit and have Sheikh John, Ken and Bay make any closing comments that you would like to make, Sheikh John, Ken and Bay, and then Brother Warren, and then following Brother Warren, we'll have Mr. Bianca do the closing commentary, and I may throw something in there if something is said that I might want to just make a brief comment about, but I'm not going to give another long talk like I did just a few minutes ago, for sure. So welcome again, Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali, and sorry we didn't get a chance to talk today, but on my text I let you know what I was doing most of the afternoon, and I appreciated the comments that we were able to have back and forth, but now we're talking, and I certainly am glad to have you here. And what are your thoughts this evening?
Well, I'm very pleased to be with you gentlemen this evening. I want to first of all give the greetings of peace and paradise of Assalamu Alaikum to my listening audience and to my brother, my dear brother, Imam Musa, Washington Cabinet, Abu. And all of the other panelists, following the narrative of the discussion this evening, I want to kind of go through it as it was unfolded. But I want, before I do that, I want to first of all, Brother Warren, I just have to call attention to Brother Warren's contribution. You know, I don't know if it has something to do with the circle of influence that you know, the international influence that he, the people he rubbed elbows with, but I'm always impressed with his way of couching his comments with a eye of suspicion. Yeah, I like that little twist that he put in there about how they might want to get rid of Kamala Harris, because she might be a political liability, and then nominate her. And this that's how we started off the program, which was questions relative to President Biden announcing in advance that it's going to be a black woman. But I like Brother Wong's suspicious mind. I mean, I like his sense of suspicion because it's certainly warranted based on the Europeans' history. But anyway, I want to say is that, one thing, he, when he made the statement, he let everybody know they played a piece from here as being a part of a campaign promise. But, as far as campaign promises go, I like another comment Brother Warren pointed out about how many of President Biden's, platforms have met with any real fanfare of existence. I mean, even his name on his name themes, even in Glasgow, Sweden, yes, he really ran on that. And he keeps echoing it, about global warming, but his policies when it comes to fossil fuels, giving out so many, a huge lease down in the Gulf of Mexico, one of the biggest federal leases for offshore drilling, this country ever gave. But I'm just saying he's all the, in one voice he's talking about global warming, but he's pedal to the metal when it comes to fossil fuels. I mean, it's such a level of ambiguity, in his administration in terms of the overall reflection. He promised, one of the largest minorities in this country is the Mexicans who, about 11 million of them are seeking a path to citizenship. Anyway, he made all kind of promises to them, and they are still those promises are in limbo. I don't want to come across as a person that is anti or against or a thumbs down on President Biden. I'm just looking at what is, okay, and what, anyway. But getting back to my brother, Sheikh John Kenneth Bay question, Professor Abouy, Musa, he was pointing out that I have done quite a bit of extensive study, literary country. This study relative to the Jewish people, I listened to Brother Sheikh John Kenneth Bay question, one of his first questions was Hitler a Catholic? One of the things in my first publication, which came out about 20 years ago, I called attention to the fact that, Hitler was not a product of Islam. I thought that was something that is very, very necessary to make very clear, not to say that anybody who has any vague knowledge about history knows that to be true, but, just to make that statement in a broad sense, because, it seems like in recent times it's always been a situation where they want to pit Muslims against Jewish people. But, one of the worst things that ever befell the Jewish people, it was at the hands of, as I'm going to put it, Christendom. I think trying to follow the logic of Brother Sheikh John Kim's question, it's really kind of jumps at an elephant in the room, kind of jumps up at you. Why? The Jews. Why the Jews? The final solution, I think that's what the third rank, Hitler, finally when he decided to start disintegrating millions, 8 million Polish people that were perished. I mean, many of them were Jews, of course. Not that had mercy on us, so little people. I mean, such a brutally barbaric, you know, they say approach. You know, I mean, why are they being seen? Well, one thing that I look at is that they were very wealthy. Okay, and Germany was trying to come out of the doldrums of the First World War, and you know, and that was a major issue. But you know, I've heard just like even Mr. Farrakhan was targeted one time of saying that he was compared. He was, in fact, he was helping Jesse Jackson run for office in '83. Anyway, so yeah, he was being flanked by Minister Farrakhan going to churches and everything, and so the Jewish people said that Minister Farrakhan, they likened him to Hitler because he said he was solidifying his people using hate. So studying that, using hate to solidify his people. Okay, so, all right, you know, so why the Jews? Okay, well, one of the things that made it very convenient for, anyway, but one thing I can say, they were wealthy. They were wealthy people. They were basically, you know, easy target, wealthy people, very, very arrogant. You know, and they said, you know, that's the first thing. And they say why somebody's come after us because they say they are chosen people. They're arrogant. You know, it's, you know, they're arrogant. Part of their arrogance, but most of them, you know, shared much of that arrogance. You know, after that Holocaust situation. You know, so you know, but then you know, and one of the things that was pointed out, you know, when Professor Mui was talking, sharing his from a historical standpoint with Brother Sheikh John Kabay, is that you know the alliance between the Jewish and the Muslims, you know, first of all, I mean, that alliance goes way back because, you know, I mean, as a matter of fact, the Holy Prophet Abraham, you know, is referred to as being the Imam of the Prophets, okay, if you study the chronology here, you know, even the way Holy Prophet Abraham presents his argument when it comes to the monotheistic perspective of a deity, you know, he was in an elimination process of saying, well, the sun comes and goes, you know, the moon doesn't stay. No, in other words, there's got to be a power greater than all of these powers because those, so it was a deductive reasoning kind of a thing. And so, what makes the Jewish people, you know, particularly a target? So, you know, it's their intellectual power base, their philosophy. But then one of the things I mentioned in my first book is that, you know, after the Holocaust, you know, and the targeting of the Jewish people, I said they didn't learn anything. They or if we as humanity, because you know we all suffer at the loss of one of us, you know, I mean, for whom the bell tolls, is an old statement too. Is that so? What, you know, one thing I say, one thing in that first book I say is that the Jewish people didn't learn anything else. Man judges man, but God will judge us all. And that's one of the things that led to the Constitution of America adopting the Zionist state. You know, they say, and then also the huge contribution that was given by Einstein as well. And it's just because the way I came to, even my first book, you know, say I have a picture, of Albert Einstein. Even my second book had a picture of Albert Einstein because it says he was like a, he was like the liberator of his people. To say, well, you know, if they say they were a chosen people, then, you know, the insights that he has and his contributions that led to the atomic bomb, which they all, you know, there was always this quest to find the seat of God's power. So when he unveiled this, the secret of the atomic bomb, okay, it led to his, anyway, I don't want to go on and on here on this subject because it's, you know, I'm and two brothers, you know, and Musa know that I'm kind of like a nonstop, you know, and my grandfather's name being Elijah, which means Jehovah's God, you know, then his last name, Muhammad, you know, and he spoke in the voice of, I'm the seventh angel who reached both hands up to heaven. So he spoke from the plateau of, from a biblical, you know, which the Old Testament is actually a footing for not only, you know, only the New Testament, but is clearly a footing for the Holy Quran, as Prophet Muhammad came, was born 571 years after AD. So, you know, anyway, I'm just going to kind of leave it there, you know, but certainly, and thank you for your patience, and, you know, you're talking about somebody back to Carson, but I don't want to really get into that too much, you know, but I want to make sure I leave time for some others to go around the round table, so to speak. Thank you very much for your listening. And I feel like I'm in the readings of peace and paradise as I greeted you originally. So I greet you at the end of my sharing.
Thank you, Mr. Jismam Ali. Well, we had to... last few minutes of the program, we're going to give everyone that has not spoken again a chance, and we're going to go ahead, and since I had said that next would be Sheikh John Kenan Bey, we'll bring you on, and any closing comments that you would like to make, we welcome them. And then Brother Warren, I'm glad you're still with us and certainly want to hear anything that you would like to add. And then, Ms. Bianchi, if you will, then close out with concluding commentary. So John Kenan Bey, the mic is yours. Please go ahead and take it away.
I just wanted to just make an additional comment in reference to Jesus being identified both as Jewish and Moabite, which Moabites presently are the Moors. If you look at the division of the group, they end up being two separate groups springing from one source, if you talk about going back to Abraham. I just wanted to say that sort of is brought together in the Bible, with the Christian Bible, which has the first part of the Bible is dealing with the Jews in a sense that the Jews consider themselves different and do not accept the teaching of Jesus. So there's a vision there. But they all come from one source. But there's a vision placed along the way. And there probably will be a unification at some point in time. I just wanted to bring out some of that commonality. But they also bring me to the arts in the sense of the artistic arts demonstrating somewhat occurred during the Inquisition. There's a movie on a series on Netflix called Always a Witch, and it gives some insight what was going on during the Inquisition, the role that the Catholic Church played, so forth and so on, and where they actually have our people in slavery at that particular time. So, but it's part of history that the light is shown on in a different way. It's uncovering some of the aspects of our journey that hasn't covered up and showing in a new light. So I just want to kind of make some comment about that in general. Peace.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Sheikh John Kenan Bey. And now, as we proceed towards the end of the program, we certainly are looking forward to comments, concluding comments from you, Brother Warren. So the mic is yours. Please go ahead and share your thoughts with us again, please.
yes, I just want to say in closing, beginning with the topic about the a black woman being selected as a Supreme Court justice. I just think that we have to really scrutinize who these black people are that's being tapped into these positions. And it's very clear that even since the first black president, Barack Obama, that the power elite of whites are socially engineering certain type of blacks. So at one time, you remember, white people were very comfortable in the media, in movies, and in certain positions with lighter-skinned black people, blacks with lighter skin. Well, it looks like now the criteria for because all this is about is what are white people who allow this, what are they comfortable with? So it looks like the two criteria is that the black person should be biracial or the black person should have a white spouse. And I understand that quite a few of these black female candidates who are being examined to potentially be the person selected, they have white husbands. And now I'm not into this anti-black immigrant thing like a lot of blacks are trying to participate in. See, you know, in other words, the black person parents are from Nigeria or their parents are from the Caribbean, that makes them less black. It's about consciousness. It's about a person's view and understanding of how the system works against black people. So you have, see, because what's being pushed, Mr. Washington, is this view that the American black is somehow a superior black than the black from other countries, right? And that somehow the American black knows what oppression and racism is. Well, if that's the case, how do you explain Clarence Thomas, who come from Georgia and lived in Jim Crow, who's an Uncle Tom? How do you explain the Attorney General of Kentucky? How do you explain Tim Scott of South Carolina? How do you explain Carson? They're born American blacks, but they have no respect for black people and for black people's experience. They identify with white people. Some of our greatest contributors to black liberation have been blacks from the Caribbean. Stokely Carmichael, people like Shirley Chisholm, and we can go on and on with that. Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier from the Bahamas. You know, Esther Rowe, who played on Good Times, she's from the Bahamas. So this thing about because a person is from a different country, they're less black. It's about consciousness. Consciousness, okay? And just because you're a black person born in Alabama, born in Louisiana, Mississippi, and your folks were sharecroppers, doesn't mean you're going to have a consciousness. So I just wanted to bring that part up. There are some suspicious black people that white people are promoting. We need to kind of address that. Why is it statistically all of the black women being selected for top jobs got to have white husbands all of a sudden? Okay, and black people who happen to be biracial, see, that's the kind of stuff they did during slavery, Mr. Washington. They picked out certain type of blacks they wanted to play certain roles for them. So the light-skinned females were called fancy girls. And so when you went to the slave market here in New Orleans to buy your fancy girl, you paid a high price for them, number one. And it was always selected to work in the house as you know, nannies or whatever. But they were more than often the sex companions for white men. Well, this is the kind of what's going on right here today. That if we got the white people or the white power elite, not the rank and file white, but the white people make the decisions the same, if we got to have diversity, then we want these kind of blacks up there. We can't get away with putting them all light skinned because we're going to get called on it. But we'll make them brown, and if they blue-black, they got to have a white spouse. Well, anyway, I just want to put that. The last thing is the Jewish story. Remember during the situation in Europe when Jews were being killed, the Jews in America did not necessarily come to their defense, because many of those Jews were poor, and many of the Jews in the United States had status. And there's very good documentation that when those Jews were being killed, many of the American Jews initially did not have any concern for them. Even Hollywood, the movie industry that was controlled by Jewish people, collaborated with the Nazis, because the Nazis were consulting with Hollywood for propaganda. Okay, and so that's very well documented. So Jewish people were all not the same. Okay, they were all not the same. You had poor Jews in Russia and in Poland, but you had very wealthy Jews that controlled, that because of what happened in Europe in the Middle Ages and the Catholic Church policy against usury, the Jews were very well situated in the financial structure of life. And so they were the money handlers in Europe. So the prejudice, the anti-Semitism, is a European phenomenon, because Europe is a Catholic, because Europe is a Christian place, number one, and there was this belief that the Jews killed Christ, number two. There was a religious prejudice against Jewish people. It was a religious prejudice. But at the same time there was a religious prejudice, many of the Jews held very critical roles and positions with the ruling elite in Europe, okay? And so even during the American Civil War, many of the Confederates were Jewish, Judah P. Benjamin and all them. Many slaveholders, well, many Jewish people were crucial in the promotion of slavery, let's put it that way. And I can go on. And then when slavery ended, it was shown that in Congress, it was a Jewish congressman that introduced the concept of sharecropping to be used. And Jews were very much against Booker T. Washington. They knew that what Booker T. Washington was trying to get, well, how he was organizing black people, would eventually compete against them. I've actually read some things that some Jewish rabbis said, some very bad things about Mr. Washington, Mr. Booker T. Washington. You know, so when we talk about the Jews being killed in Europe, that's separate from the Jews that were living in the United States, because the Jews that were living in the United States were actually accused of being unsympathetic to the plight of the Jews in Europe. And only afterwards did they then begin to put on some sort of shoe and rally. I mean, you got to understand, in the southern, Mr. Washington, I'm telling you, these southern cities like New Orleans and Mobile, these Jews were very well off. They had their little synagogues and they had their little summer camps and schools. But guess what, Mr. Washington? You had some of them played what you call liberal roles and what you call, help black people financially, but a whole lot of them were segregationists. There was a lot of segregation talk in these synagogues in the promotion. I mean, I've met Jews in Louisiana and Mississippi. They sound no different than any other redneck in terms of the accents and stuff. But they were pushing. Yeah, you had some Jews who were benefactors of some black causes, but that was not representative of all the Jews in the synagogues and stuff in the South. Because one thing about the Jewish people as a religious group, they're not a racial group. They're white people who practice a religion called Judaism. And they did not want to be set, they did not want to be looked upon by the Gentile whites as being against the segregation system. Remember that movie, Grinding Miss Daisy? When Miss Daisy's son, who owned a business, I think it was a textile firm, was kind of concerned about his mother's participation in going to the NAACP meeting and supporting, because he had to do business with the rank and file white Gentiles. Okay? So in New Orleans, you had Gentile business class and a Jewish business class. They did work together. Now, socially, the Gentile whites did not allow the Jewish whites into their social organization. So like in New Orleans, we have what you call Mardi Gras organizations. So the whites who were Gentiles for a very long time excluded the white Jews from their social group. So when Mardi Gras time would come, a lot of the white Jews would go to Colorado and go skiing. Okay, but they were, but the white Jews were still the bankers and everything else in terms of business here. So I just wanted to clarify that, that they were not a, when we talk about the brutal murder of Jews in Europe, in Germany, Poland, these other places, in Russia, that the American Jews who had been here, you know, at least since the mid-1800s or whatever, they had a whole different view to those Jews. They didn't really identify with those, because then those Jews were poor. And so many of the Jews here who were wealthy and established, they really didn't want to be associated with it. And I read that. That's very well documented. So I just wanted to just contribute those things there.
Well, certainly, I'm very impressed and very excited to listen to you and to all of our panelists, beginning with Ms. Bianchi, who will be closing us out in just a second, and, of course, St. John Kenan Bay, as well as you, Brother Warren, and certainly Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali. And I do want to mention one thing by way of, I guess you could say, promotional announcement. If any are listening via the Internet, and according to the stats that I'm able to see, we usually have at least three times as many people that tune in via the Internet as we actually have participating on the podcast, and those numbers may be even more than three times, but I'll just say that we have a good percentage of people who also are part of the show, but they don't come on to speak. And I want to let all of you who are listening via the Internet, as well as our panelists, know that all of these broadcasts are archived. And there's so much information. I mean, it's just amazing how much information, and all of the people that are on the show have such a depth and breadth of very pertinent knowledge, because the things that we talk about every week are things that are going on in the lives of most African Americans, because I tell everyone to talk about whatever you want to, but usually, almost always, the panel follows my lead, and what I do is I scan the news throughout the week to see what is standing out in the news concerning the African-American community, and the information that is brought to the table by our panelists is just what I would say the highest quality of presentations that one can find, and those that would like to listen to the last 4 years, we're actually into our fifth year broadcasting this program, you can go to Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum Blog Talk Radio, or just put in Blog Talk Radio Booker T. Washington. And you will probably get it that way, but if you put in the whole thing, Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum, Blog Talk Radio, you'll certainly be able to see the list of all the previous programs that we've done, and you can actually download them and listen to them at your convenience, so you don't have to, when you find it, you don't have to sit there and listen to an hour and a half of conversation right then. You can download it. And at your convenience, listen to it. I just want to make sure everybody understands that. So we're at the end now of the program, and we want to bring on our co-host for our final ending comments. Ms. Bianchi, you're back.
Well, yeah, I was talking to somebody. Noah, good conversation. I finally reached some milestones today. I got done with my project for one of my friends in a country over there in Africa. It's going to be a $7.97 to $8 billion project. I said, see if we can get that going. And you know, you made mention about Einstein, and Einstein was pretty bright. But you know, you had a lot of black American males and females that participated on the Manhattan Project that was either physicists, chemists, mechanical and electrical engineers, and so on. Those of note was Lord Albert Quarterman and Ernest Wilkinson, amongst about 20 other. I think the lone female on there was Carolyn Bernice Parker. I love engineers. Engineers solve problems so they don't come back. Doctors treat problems. Anyway, everybody have a nice, pleasant evening. The rest of the weekend.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bianchi, and congratulations on the successful project that you just announced. We certainly look forward to hearing more about that. If you,
yeah, we'll try to let
you share.
We'll try to keep you informed. But I'll talk to you guys later on. Bye-bye.
Okay, great. Good night. Have a great rest of the weekend. To everyone on our panel tonight, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us tonight. Again,
Mr. Washington.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
sir.
Can I share one more thing with you?
Of course. Yes, go right ahead.
I was reading this thing, an excellent book that the Nation of Islam published in 2010 is called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2. It is excellently documented. It is professionally standard. Sources are basically all Jewish sources from high-quality works. And this particular volume looks at the economic condition that African Americans had evolved under after slavery and relationship with Jews. So there was a part in the book here called Russian Pogroms versus American Lynching, where they mentioned Booker T. Washington. They said at the end of the 19th century, American Jews began to champion the cause of Russian Jews who had come under the repressive dictates of Tsar Alexander III. And the New York Times was outspoken in its coverage of the issue. Blacks immediately saw the parallels in the plight of the Russian Jews and offered Jews sympathy and support. In fact, blacks became, according to one Jewish scholar, quote, among the most vociferous critics of Tsarist anti-Semitism. Well, when Booker T. Washington expressed those similarities, the New Orleans-based Jewish Ledger published an editorial entitled An Impudent Nigger, in which it favorably quoted the notorious Christian Klan lover Thomas Dixon. The paper's Jewish editors added to Dixon's invective their own anti-black bile. Quote, to compare the Jew, who occupies the highest pinnacle of human superiority and intellectual attainment, with the Negro, who forms the mud at his base, is something which only a Negro, which more than the usual vanity and impudence of his race, could attempt. So that's just one of many quotes where in the Jewish newspapers here in America, particularly in the South, that they express contempt for black people and especially against your great-grandfather, Booker T. Washington. And that book is so well documented that many Jewish scholars themselves, they can't deal with the book and ignore it. And I remember when I ordered my copy, It was a couple of, maybe about a week before it got here, and they were telling me that whole boxes of the book were disappearing at the post office and stuff when people would order it. But the book, the documentation of the book, but I just wanted to bring that up because your great-grandfather was organizing black people in a manner that many American Jewish merchants and business people saw that black people would have been competitive against them. And so they didn't appreciate that. They understood that. And then you had the Jewish benefactors and what you call paternalistic benefactors that wanted to keep black people on their knees, you know, give us money and be our friends, but make sure we never develop an economic plan. That's why Du Bois left the NAACP, and that's my contribution.
Well, thank you. Thank you, certainly. Appreciate all of that information. And I do have that particular book, and I'm going to delve into it a lot more than I have since I received it. I bought it in addition to the first volume several years ago. And now that we've brought this topic up, I'm definitely going to look deeper into it.
Yeah, volume two is stronger. Yeah, volume two is stronger in its documentation.
Yeah,
and I think they learned. They kind of learned from volume one. Volume two is kind of real solid.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for telling me that, because I will definitely get into it. Well, we're going to go ahead and close now. Ms. Piak has already left us, but I want to say thank you again to everyone. We look forward to all who are able to join us again on next Saturday. Hopefully everyone will have a good week coming up. And again, safe travels, Mr. Brother Warren, as you continue your international representation. And we certainly look forward to hearing some report about that whenever you are able to give it when you return. So God bless everyone.
I'll be back next week. I'll be next week.
Okay, well, wonderful. That's great. We look forward to hearing from you on that, on the next show then. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We're going to close. Yes, sir. Someone wants to say something?
Yes, sir. Can I give a short caveat real quick?
Of course. Go ahead. Yes.
Yes, sir. Your great-grandfather, one of the things that made him a target was because Franklin Delano Roosevelt made him one of his first guests at his home when he got in the White House, and they said they were also outraged at the fact when he invited him there that his wife and I think his wife and daughter were present at the table, and there was a big backlash from, Booker T. Washington. I mean, as you know, he met with the Queen of England, so he was targeted. For him, the Jewish people are not a homogeneous society, okay, for one thing. And that's one that I made a comment one time in New York to a columnist, is the biggest problem I have with the Jewish people, since they're all over the place, so to speak, is that, oftentimes they cannot make their mind up as to whether or not they're Jewish or they white. Okay, they seem to be with the winner, whoever the winner is, but even though until 1954, which is in my book, on every Protestant front door in the South, it says Jewish, Negroes, Jewish, and dogs around to the back. And they refer to Jewish people as just like black people. And these Protestants, they believe that we don't even have a soul period. So anyway, our listeners should invest in some research in these areas. But thank you, brothers, and I look forward to our next conversation. Again, assalamu alaikum. Thank you.
Okay, well, alaikum salam. Sheikh John Kennedy Bay, we're closing now. But did you want to make any further comment before we do close?
No. No, I really enjoyed the conversation. I've learned a lot, and looking forward to next week.
Okay, I just want to say thank you all, and we're closing now with our closing theme song, Lift Every Voice and Sing. God bless you all, and may you have a good week coming up.